I think we all have things that we're afraid of. Like I don't like snakes. Like I'm afraid of snakes. So a few years ago here at Fort Wilderness, they did this snake class. I don't know if they still do it, but my son was 6 or 7 and he wanted to go to the snake class. So I took him like a good dad, and they had all these live snakes in the snake class. And they had this large, I don't remember what it was, gigantic snake. I think it was like 100 feet long. And they said, does anyone want to hold the snake? And my son looks at me, and I look at him. I'm like, you want to hold it? He goes, no. I'm like, well, he's got to learn to be a man. So I said, I'll hold the 100-foot snake. And they put that snake in my hands, and it's gigantic. And I'm standing there holding this snake. You ever been paralyzed? We all have things we're afraid of. Maybe for you it's spiders. Maybe it's clowns. I don't know. When I was in college, I was a resident assistant. I was in charge of a dorm room of guys, and I had a really wild haul one year. But I had one guy on my floor that was deathly, deathly afraid of dogs. He had been bitten when he was a kid. Well, one evening, I'm sitting in my room doing my homework, and I hear this terrifying scream echo through the dorm. And I walk outside, and two of my dorm mates are standing outside this guy's door, and they're holding the door shut. That's never a good sign if you're in a dorm full of guys and they're screaming and the door's being held shut. And they're holding the door shut. And I walk out and I said, what are you guys doing? And they take off. And I open the door to an unimaginable scene. This guy that's afraid of dogs is up on his bed. You ever seen those old cartoons when there's a housewife and there's a mouse and she's up on a stool? You know what I'm talking about? That's what it looks like. He's up on his bed and there's a puppy on the ground, maybe weighs 4 pounds, and it's peed all over the carpet, and it's sitting there, and he is screaming, get that thing out of here, get that thing out of here. Well, they found a stray puppy. They brought it in his room, shoved it in, and locked the door, because they knew he was afraid of dogs. Terrible, right? But that's what college-age guys do. We all have fears. For you, it might be heights, it might be small spaces. We've all got stuff we're afraid of. But here is the tension that every single one of us live with. We need fear because fear helps us. It's part of our wiring. Now, we don't like to admit that we're afraid, especially as men. If you're a man, we don't like to admit we're afraid because fear is often perceived as weakness. So we say things like, well, I'm just stressed out or I'm concerned. But we never say I'm afraid. And yet we need fear because fear allows us to respond to perceived threats. We've all heard of fight or flight. It gives us that burst of adrenaline that we need to address dangerous situations that we're in. My parents own a house in Florida, so we get down there a few times a year. When my daughter Hannah was about 4, her and I were walking on the golf course. She was on my shoulders, and we came around a corner, a bend in the car path, and about 8 feet from us was this 10-foot alligator. You ever been 10 feet from an alligator? It's frightening. So I stopped, and I got that adrenaline rush because I didn't know what was going to happen, and so backed away slowly. But that fight-or-flight response helps us sense, avoid, and deal with danger. Gavin DeBecker, in his book, The Gift of Fear, says, fear is a brilliant internal guardian. We all live in an uncertain world, a world that is incredibly unpredictable, a world that has scary realities. Each generation has its own realities that cause fear and tension in society. When I was a kid growing up in the early 80s, we would do these air raid drills in my school. Anybody remember those air raid drills where they would sound an alarm and you'd have to climb underneath your desk and practice in case there was a bombing, although I never knew what the desk was going to do if bombs were being dropped on the school, but we would practice these air raid drills. because we were always afraid the Russians were going to attack. And then the movie Red Dawn came out, which made it even worse. So everyone's afraid of the Russians. Well, now in 2018, it's not the Russians, it's active shooters. Everyone's afraid of active shooters. That's a reality in our society. Even in our own church at Northbrook, we have drills for active shooters. We've got a security team that are plain clothes and armed just in case. That is the world that we live in. And because we live in a world in which there are valid threats, fear helps us to navigate them and deal with them. However, that is not the kind of fear I want to talk about this morning. I'm not talking about the good kind of fear, because all of that is the good kind of fear. It helps us deal with life, the uncertainty of it. But there's another kind of fear. It's a kind of fear that I bet some of us in this room experience. It's the kind of fear that causes us to live our lives afraid. Now, we might have other words for it. We might call it being cautious, or we might say, I just like to play it safe in my life. But what we mean is we're afraid. Some of us base all of our decisions on fear. Others of us are paralyzed because of fear. Some of us hold to life so tightly because we're afraid. And those of us who are parents, some of us occasionally hold our children back because we're afraid. I like to travel. Our church, Northbrook, supports ministries all over the world. Two in particular are located, one in India and one in Ghana, West Africa. And so I go every year to Ghana or to India, which are really crazy places. If you've never left the United States and gone to a third world country, I encourage you to go. It will change your perception of life. So I decided that my children need to experience the world. We live in Slinger, Wisconsin, which is not reality. Slinger, Wisconsin is about 4,900 people. It might as well be Mayberry. And my children need to experience the world. So I decided a year ago that I was going to take my daughter with me to Ghana, West Africa. And I told a friend of mine that I was going to take my then 14-year-old daughter to Africa with me, and he freaked out. He went off on me and said, why would you take your daughter out of this country? I would never take my children out of this country. I would never take my grandchildren. He made me feel like a terrible parent. He said, the world is unsafe. I can't believe you're going to take your daughter to that place. But I made a decision, and so I took her to Ghana, West Africa, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made because my daughter experienced things that she would have never experienced. She saw things that she would have never seen had I not taken her. But had I heeded that guy's advice and was afraid, yes, Africa is not Slinger. Where we went was way out there. It was very poor, very impoverished. There were some dangerous realities, but I decided my life was not going to be ruled by fear. Now, it didn't help that on the way home, we got bumped up to business class, and they were handing us champagne in silver goblets, but, you know, most of it worked out pretty well. Some of us are missing out on life because we're afraid. There are some that may come to the end of our life that have deep regrets because we did not take that risk, that chance, because we're afraid. And truth is, there are a lot of things that we're afraid of we don't need to be afraid of. There are some things that we worry about that will never happen. Someone once said, worry is a down payment or a deposit on something that will probably never happen. Some things are so out of our control anyway that worry and fear does nothing to alleviate the situation. The only thing it often does is ruin a good night's sleep. Molly Ball, writing in The Atlantic, writes that fear is in the air and fear is surging. Americans are more afraid today than they've been in a long, long time. And Dr. Tim Elmore writes, teenagers today have the same level of anxiety that psychiatric patients had in the 1950s. Fear is alive. There's a story in one of the Gospels. The disciples find themselves in a situation and they are afraid. Yet it was something they did not need to be afraid of in light of who Jesus was. And as a result, Jesus uses this experience to ask a simple yet significant question. The story is found in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 4. It's a fairly familiar story if you've read the Gospels. Mark tells us that the day came and evening approached, and Jesus said to his disciples, speaking of a lake, let's go over to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, and just as he was in the boat. There were other boats with him, and a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion, and the disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" So the disciples are with Jesus in this boat. These guys are seasoned fishermen, many of them. Many of them make their living as fishermen. A squall comes out of nowhere, and they are freaking out, except for Jesus. Apparently, Jesus is a deep sleeper. The rocking boat, the wind, the waves, the lightning does not wake him up. He does not care. Jesus does not need a white noise maker. He sleeps soundly through the storm. The disciples wake him up. They're freaking out, and they ask him, "Teacher, don't you care?" And Jesus says something profound to them. He says, "Why are you afraid? Do you not have faith?" But I don't believe that's the best translation of that verse. And the Bible is translated from the Greek, as many of you know, the New Testament, and there are multiple translations of the Bible. But there are two words that I think are translated too lightly. The first one is the word afraid, and the second one is the word faith. Because in the original Greek, the word afraid could literally be translated as cowardly. And the word faith quite literally means to have confidence in. So I think a better reading of that passage should be Jesus saying to his disciples, "Why are you acting so cowardly? Do you still not have confidence in me?" That translation gives everything a whole new meaning. Why are you acting so cowardly? Do you not have confidence in me after all that you've seen me do? Now, Jesus' tone was not scolding. It was not mocking, it was not shaming, it was not condescending. Jesus actually had a valid concern for his disciples. For you and I, our life is filled with the unknown. Every day brings with it the possibility of challenge. So how can we, as regular people, because we're all regular people here, how can we live with courage and confidence in a very unpredictable world? See, I think it's difficult these days to live with courage. I am not naturally courageous. I never have been, even as a kid. When I was growing up, I grew up in the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church often had these things called lawn fates. I don't know if that's, do you know what a lawn fate is? Anybody? So a lawn fate is basically a carnival that happens in the parking lot of a Catholic church, and it usually involves three things. It involves cheap kids' rides, it involves games, and a whole lot of beer. That's a lawn fete. And so we would go to the lawn fete, you would buy tickets, and you'd go on rides. And so my parents would take me to the lawn fete, and they'd buy tickets, and they'd want me to ride the kids' ride. But there was one ride that I was so terrified of, I would never get on it. They would beg me to go on it, and I wouldn't do it. And I'm going to show you a picture of this terrifying ride, because it is quite threatening. This is it. I would not ride this ride. It's terrifying, right? It goes in a circle. Are you feeling me here? Not super. Can we take that off? I'm scared. This isn't working. I don't know what's going on here. If you can switch that, great. I've missed out on a lot of my life because of fear. That's an honest admission. Maybe you're here and you've... I didn't know that worked. It's terrifying, right? Take that down. I'm going to have a panic attack. Missed out on a lot of life because I've been afraid. And some of you in here know exactly what I'm talking about. There are some of us that we say, oh, you know, I don't like to spend money because I'm cheap. But the truth is you don't like to spend money because you're afraid of the future. There are some of us that we say, you know, I'm not really a people person. I'm more introverted. But the truth is we are afraid to take relational risks. Others of us say, you know, I'm actually just old-fashioned. But the truth is we're afraid of change. We're afraid to try something new or to think in a new way. There are some of us that have so arranged our lives around safety and security that it has actually become an idol. So how? How can we live with courage and confidence in an unpredictable world? So let's begin by getting really honest with Jesus' question. Because Jesus' question, again, was prompted by the disciples' question. The disciples said, "Teacher, don't you care? Don't you care about us? Aren't you afraid that we're going to die in this boat?" These are the words of some very frustrated and desperate people. But Jesus, in response, asked them a question. Why are you guys so afraid? What are you afraid of? I am here. I am literally physically with you. You've seen what I can do. Why are you afraid? As followers of Christ, we believe that God's Spirit lives in us, that he's with us. So I ask Jesus' question to all of us, all of you this morning. What is it that you're afraid of? Name your fear. Name your fear without judgment. Let's just get real honest with ourselves. See, when Jesus asked why they were afraid, he was asking them, why do you lack such perception? Don't you see clearly? Now, in first century, when Jesus was alive and this story would have been told, many first century Jews associated the sea with danger and threat to human life. Many Jews believed that the ocean, the sea, lakes were a place of chaos. It was also believed to be a place of demonic activity. So it wasn't just the wind and the rain and the waves. It was what they believed lived in the water, not just fish, but demons. So I wonder, if Jesus were sitting here today and he were to ask you that question, how would you answer? For some of us, we would say, I'm afraid of uncertainty. We live in an uncertain world filled with crime, terrorism, crazy politics. I am so uncertain as to what the future holds, and I am afraid. Others of us, we are afraid of how our relationships are going to play out. Some of us are afraid that our friendships will dissolve. Others of us are afraid because there are things happening in our family that are not going well. Some of us are afraid because the relationship with our children is not what we thought it should be. And there are even some of us that we are afraid because we have no idea how the story of our marriage is actually going to play out in the end. And we're afraid. Some of us are afraid of getting hurt. We took a relational risk. It did not go well. And you told yourself, never again. I will never put myself out there like that again. And you're afraid. Others have chronic illness, been diagnosed with something. The diagnosis is uncertain, and you're afraid. Others of us are afraid of going broke. We live in unstable financial times. We do not know what retirement's going to look like in 20 years, and we're afraid. And because we're afraid, our brain begins to tell a story. We begin to create a story that may or may not be true or real, which leads to catastrophizing, which simply means we imagine the worst case scenario, and that becomes our reality. Others of us, we're afraid of being insignificant and worthless. There are some that are afraid our life will not matter. I have met with people that say, Pastor Mike, I just want to make a difference. I want to live with meaning and purpose. There are some that feel like they will live their entire lives alone and unloved. Others are afraid of being rejected. Some of us are afraid of the apocalyptic. We are afraid a meteor is going to strike the earth. There's going to be a nuclear attack. So much so, we're so afraid of this, that a company called Vivos has developed a network of underground bunkers that you can buy for a cheap price tag of $3 million just in case. Others of us are afraid of growing old, of illnesses that come with growing old, of dying. And others of us, we're afraid of failing. What if I fail and lose everything? This one strikes close to home for me. I have two great fears in life, and one of my great fears is the fear of failing. 9 years ago this month, I came to Richfield, Wisconsin to give my very first message at Northbrook Church. It was a risk. Northbrook Church was going through a very difficult time. I had resigned my job in Colorado. I, as a result, had to resign a denomination. I lost networks of friends to move. Everything I did was a gigantic risk. I put my house on the market during a very tough period. I lost $30,000 selling my home. I left the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. I could see Pikes Peak from my bathroom. And I moved to Wisconsin. I'll never forget my first weekend in Milwaukee. I was with my wife, and we were walking around Target in Menominee Falls because we needed something, because we always need something from Target or Walmart. And I'm walking around. I don't know a soul in Wisconsin. We moved not knowing one single person. And I'm walking in the aisles, and I think to myself, what if I move here and I fail? And I got this nauseating, I'm going to throw up right in Target, because what if I risk everything and I fail? We live in a culture that makes success a god. The appearance of success is the only option, starting from childhood, and it comes with a steep cost. Because if you do not succeed, at least according to the American version of success, then you're left feeling like a loser and a nobody. We have all these fears, and yet the greatest and most often quoted encouragement in the Bible is do not be afraid. The book of 1 John, chapter 4, verse 18, John writes to us, "There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear." So how do we experience a love that actually drives out fear? Because if you read between the lines, Jesus is implying in his question that cowardice and faith cannot coexist in the same place. Why are you so afraid? Why are you acting so cowardly? Do you not have faith? So, I'm going to either focus on the swirling unpredictability of our world, or I'm going to look at the character and the nature of God. And when I read the scriptures, both the Old Testament and the New Testament, what I discover is that the foundation of God's character is love. It is the defining characteristic of who he is. Yes, I believe God is holy and righteous and all those things. But if you look at the scriptures, the actual scriptures, they talk about the character and nature of God. The foundation is always love. And the most immediate effect of perfect love is assurance. The most immediate effect of perfect love is assurance. And assurance comes from experiencing and expressing love. So here's what's confusing to me. Here's what's confusing to me as a follower of Christ. Why is it that we, and I use it as the corporate we, why do we use fear to motivate people to faith? Why is it that we try to quite literally, and pardon me, why do we quite literally try to scare the hell out of people? In my late teens, when I came to faith as a teenager, and I attended a youth group, and every year they had us watch this old film. The film was called A Thief in the Night. Anybody ever seen A Thief in the Night? Anybody know what I'm talking about? It's terrifying. A Thief in the Night is loosely based on the book of Revelation. It's a film, it's a fictional film, it's a movie about Christ coming back, and some people are taken and some people are left behind, and there's a verse in the book of Revelation in which there's a second chance where you can come to faith, but if you come to faith after the second coming, then you got to give your life and you get beheaded, and there's a guillotine in this film, and it was terrifying. And we would watch this film every year, and I would go home and I couldn't sleep. I'm having nightmares of getting left behind. It felt like emotional terrorism. That's what that film is. If you like it, sorry. I mean, there are people that defend it, whatever. To me, if the defining characteristic of God is love. Not my opinion coming from the scriptures. And if the defining characteristic of Christianity is love, I mean, Jesus even said, they're going to know, the world's going to know that you're my followers by the love that you have for one another. That is our defining characteristic. And if love casts out fear, then why is it so often that we, as the church, again, corporate C, try and use fear to cast out fear? It doesn't make any sense. So, here's what I want to do for the next few moments. I talked about practices. I want to give you four practices that will help us live with courage in an unpredictable world. Now, I want to be upfront. I was given a copy of this book called Unafraid by Adam Hamilton. Incredible book. If you've never read it, I encourage you to read this book. And so in this book, Adam Hamilton talks about fear, and he uses the acronym FEAR, F-E-A-R, to describe four practices that we can incorporate in our life to live a life that casts out this fear that Jesus talks about. So the first word starts with F, is face your fears with faith. Face your fears with faith. See, this was the challenge of Jesus to the disciples. He's asking them, where do you place your faith, your confidence? The word faith and the word belief come from a similar word. They both mean to have confidence in. Who are you going to place your confidence in when the world swirls around? Now, the disciples, they're just freaking out. They're paranoid. They say, Jesus, don't you care if we drown? There's a story that this story reminds me of. It's a story that's been told for over 2,500 years. It's been told in a variety of forms over those 2,500 years. But in 1968, it made its debut under the title Henny Penny, and then remade again under the title Chicken Little. Many of you know the story. The chicken, Henny Penny, is scratching on the ground one day, and an acorn falls on her head. And she begins to cry out, the sky is falling. And she runs off, I've got to tell the king that the sky is falling. Along the way, she meets a friend who's a rooster. Then she meets a goose, a duck, and a turkey. And she works them all up, gets them all into hysterics. The sky is falling, and we've got to go tell the king. So they're running because the sky is falling, the world is ending. They've got to tell the king. And on their way, they meet the fox. And for a moment, these animals suspend their logic, because the fox says to them, oh, you need to go to the king. Well, I know a secret passageway to the king. And so the fox takes the rooster, the goose, the duck, the turkey, and the chicken into his den, which is the secret passageway, and they all become dinner for the family of the fox. We live in a culture in which the sky is always falling. Just turn on the news. It can be CNN. It can be Fox News. I don't care what you watch. The sky is always falling. Remember Y2K? I have friends that sold everything and moved to South Dakota to a bunker because the world was going to end on midnight the year 2000. I would turn on the radio station to the Christian channel, and every other advertisement was for generators and prepackaged food and survival kits. And Christians freaked out. The world is coming to an end. And then it all happened, and we all know what happened. Nothing. And there are thousands of people with boxes of MREs in their basement that will never get eaten because no one's going to eat them nasty things unless you have to. And if you were in the Army, you know exactly what I'm talking about. See, someone needs to tell Henny Penny it was just an acorn. The sky is not falling. So what if instead of declaring that the sky is falling, that we simply live with faith and hope? Because what the world needs is not more hysterics. What the world needs is hope. Hope-filled people. I'm not saying the world is perfect, because it is not. We live in a very, very challenging time. But should we not be people of hope, people of faith? And again, when I talk about faith, I'm not talking about simply believing in something. I'm not talking about if you just pray hard enough, everything will change. I'm talking about faith as trust in a person. God's promise to us, do not be afraid because I am with you. Faith is having the courage to trust God even when things do not make sense, confident that he will take care of it. It's not a nebulous belief in a philosophy. It's a solid belief in a person. When I was in seventh grade, I went to North Park Junior High School. And as a seventh grader, I was relentlessly bullied by the guy that shared the locker next to me. His name was Randy. Randy was bigger than me. Randy was older than me. And he would threaten me. He would shove me. He would slam my locker on me. And I would get so frustrated. I couldn't take it anymore, but I knew I couldn't take him because he was bigger and badder than me. I suppose I could have prayed, but instead, I had a friend named Jeff. And Jeff was a year older than me, and Jeff was really big for an eighth grader. And I told Jeff what was happening to me every day as I tried to go to my locker. The next day, there I am at my locker. There's Randy doing what he does. And out of nowhere, Jeff comes and shoves Randy into his locker. And he says to Randy, if you keep messing with Mike, me and you are going to have problems. And from that time on, I never had a problem with Randy. Why? Because I trusted in a person. Face your fears with faith, not with belief in, but trust in. Secondly, examine your assumptions in light of facts. We live in a world in which the facts seem to get skewed very, very easily. And as a result, we have unhelpful, automatic thoughts that can lead to fear. You read something on Facebook, because we all know Facebook is a stellar source of accurate news reporting. And we take it at face value, and then we spread chaos and we get people all worked up. I received a note a few months ago from a gentleman in my church. He sent me an email. This was during the NFL season, and people were kneeling and all the whole kneeling controversy. I'm not getting into that, whatever. But he sent me this image, and he goes, we got to ban everything. We got to ban the NFL because this is crazy. And this is the picture he sent me. It's from the Seattle Seahawks locker room. And they are burning a flag, American flag, in the Seattle Seahawks locker room. And he's like, see this? This is, we gotta boycott the NFL. You need to get up and preach. You need to tell people you cannot watch NFL. They are anti-American. But the truth is, this is the real picture. And then someone with some decent Photoshop skills added the American flag to it and said, see, the NFL hates America. This is why we're in the situation we are in our country in so many ways. Facebook, Twitter, social media, Photoshop, you can do miracles with Photoshop. And I sent him back and I said, oh, well, actually, here's the reality. And people don't like it when you correct them. People don't like it when you give them facts. Because we don't have facts, we create stories in our head. You send a text to someone, and they don't respond to you in 29 seconds. Oh, they must be mad at me. We make assumptions that are not true. You get on an airplane, and someone from the Middle East sits next to you. They're a terrorist. Do you realize that you're 120 times more likely to get struck by lightning than be involved in a terrorist attack? Do you realize that you're 7,000 times more likely to die in a car wreck than you are a terrorist attack? Or you meet someone and you like them till you find out they align with the other political party. And 5 minutes ago, they were awesome, and now they're an idiot, a socialist, or a racist because, well, they voted for, well, you fill in the blank. We're afraid of violent crime You would think, according to the news reports, that violent crime is on the rise. But the truth is, violent crime has been reduced in our country by half since 1990, and the murder rate has dropped to what it was in 1964. But we are more afraid now than ever of violent crimes because it's everywhere. We see it everywhere. We don't pause to examine the facts, and it feeds our fear. So face your fears with faith. Examine your assumption in light of facts. Number three, attack your anxiety with action. Jonathan Fields, who wrote the book Uncertainty, said all of us need certainty anchors in our lives. These are things that keep us centered. They are things that keep us whole, things that we can rely on to keep us in a good place. So for me, I have three certainty anchors that I practice every single day. The first thing I do is I begin every single day with 10 minutes of silence. I sit in my office on the floor. I set a timer so I'm not looking at the clock. I don't use this as a time to pray out loud to God. I simply use it as a time to sit with Jesus, and I sit on my floor, and I just sit for 10 minutes in complete silence to settle my soul, my spirit, and my mind, to calm my anxieties, and to just be with God, no strings attached. The second thing I do almost every single day is I read the scripture, and when I read a scripture that I feel like stands out to me, I focus on it for a period of time. I just read it over and over and over. And the third thing I do every single day is there are certain people in my life that I make sure I connect with every single day or most days, because to me, they're certainty anchors. They're upbeat, they're positive, they encourage me, and so I try and connect with them every single day. They are certainty anchors in my life. They bring levity to me, and they keep me centered. So what are those things in your life that you can do to attack your anxieties? Because we all have levels of anxieties in our life. It's a real emotion. What are those things that keep you centered and grounded? Attack your anxieties with actions. And finally, number four, release all of your cares to God. Because that was the invitation of Jesus, to release all of our fears to him. Now, I understand that much of what I said seems very, very easy to say and very, very difficult to do. And I get it. I'm going to share some things about my own personal life in the coming days that will help you understand. I get it when life gets complicated. But I think there is power in releasing all of our cares, our worries, and our anxieties to God. And I want to give you something. I want to give you a little practice. I call it the releasing prayer. Some of you may look at me and say, that's the most corniest thing I've ever seen. But it has helped me, and I'm going to ask you all to do it with me. And if you think it's corny, just humor me, because I can see you. I can see all of you. If you fall asleep, I can see it. I just need you to know that right now. I should have told you yesterday, so just know that so I can tell if you're participating. And if you don't participate, I'm going to call you out. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your hands. Now I want you to fold them, put them in your lap. Just fold them like this. If you're sitting, hold them in your lap. So I want you to take a second, and I want you to think of whatever it is right now that is causing you fear, whatever it is that may be causing you stress, whatever may be causing you anxiety, whatever that thing is in your life, okay? Whatever it is, I want you to put it, imagine that it's in the palms of your hands. So for me, I'm imagining that my wife's health right now is there. I've talked to her. She's getting better, so thanks for praying. But I want you to imagine whatever that thing is. Imagine it is in the palm of your hands. You can do this practice when you're at home. Just hold it there. Hold it with God. Hold on to it. Think about it. Sit with it. Be worried about it if you have to be. Just hang on to it for a moment. Whatever it is. You got it? You know what that thing is? It might be your kids, might be your marriage, might be your health, might be your job. Might be a decision you have to make. You can do this at home, and you can sit with it as long as you need to sit with it. But when you're ready, the second thing we're going to do is we're going to lift it up like this. We're going to offer it to God. We're just going to hold it up to God. This is a gesture of trust. This is a gesture of confidence. Just hold it up to him. When you feel ready, when you say, okay, God, when you get to the point where you can say, God, I can truly trust you with this, I'm going to release it, and I'm going to raise my hands as an act of worship. The church I grew up in, we would raise our hands when we worship, because in the Psalms it says, lift your hands, all you people, to God. And so when you feel ready, I want you to lift your hands to God and worship, meaning I've held on to it as long as I need to. For some of us, we may need to hang on to that thing for 10 minutes, 10 hours, or 10 days. For others of us, we may need to hold it up to God and say, God, I'm giving this to you. I'm having a hard time trusting you, but I'm going to give it to you, whatever it is. And when you're ready, God, I am going to release that to you, and I'm lifting my hands in worship. And so this morning, God, with our hands raised, we give all of our fears, our anxieties, and our worries to you. I know that for most of us, you're probably not going to magically just take them away. But we're saying we trust you. We have confidence in you. And though, God, we may need to trust you every day, we may need to hold this thing up to you every single day, whatever it is, we can hear your question, why are you so afraid? And many of us can tell you exactly why we're afraid, and so we name it in your presence without fear, without guilt, without shame. We trust you as our God and as our creator, and we offer those things up to you. We offer our fears up to you, and we declare, God, we want to live with faith. And so today, God, I ask that you would help us. In the mighty name of Christ, I pray. Amen.